Okay, good morning, everyone. So, as we discussed last week, although this is a Tehillim Shir Baruch Hashem, last week we spoke a little bit about Chanukah, and in Mirtz Hashem, today we'll get the last opportunity to speak about Chanukah for this year, and specifically I'd like to focus on the unique identity of today. So today, as Mr. Shulman just alluded to, is known not simply as the eighth day of Chanukah, but is known as Zos Chanukah. So the name Zos Chanukah, on a very simple level, doesn't have to have a deep esoteric meaning, comes from the Kriyas HaTorah. If you look at number one, so today's laning, every single day of Chanukah, we read about the different tribal offerings of the Nesiim, because even before the dramatic miracle of the Chashmonoim, of the Maccabim, these days were unique, because these were the days on which the Mishkan, more appropriately the Mizbeach, the altar in the Mishkan, was dedicated. And the way it was dedicated, by a series of offerings brought by the Nesiim, the tribal princes. So that's the Kriyas HaTorah, that's what we lane each and every day of Chanukah. So if you look Looking number one, so from today we read 8 through 12. So the way that section of the tribal offerings ends is number one, Zos Chanukas HaMizbeach B'yom Himashach Oso. This was the dedication of the offering of the altar presented by the chieftains, those are the heads of the tribes, on the day it was anointed. And then the Torah goes on to discuss the incredible amount of gifts that were brought by the tribal princes. So on a simple level, today the eighth day of Chanukah is called Zos Chanukah simply because of this statement found in the Kriyas HaTorah. Zos Chanukas HaMizbeach. This is the day when we read about the culmination of all of the tribal offerings, or all the offerings of the tribal princes, and therefore we call this day Zos Chanukah. But when one digs a little bit deeper, we begin to see something exceptionally dramatic on this last day of Chanukah. If you take a look at number two, the Maral in his Sefer Ner Mitzvah writes the following. He says, "Da'af shegam b'chol shmona simei Chanukah anhagas ha'olam hi lamala miderach hateva." Even though, again, you know, we discussed this last week. We discussed, if you remember, I know you remember, the beautiful Sefer Rokeach, right? Where the Rokeach said, dramatically beautiful, that the 36 candles, the Lamed Vav Neros, correspond to what? Excellent. Correspond to the 36 hours that the Orishon, the first light of creation. That's the power of the Neros Chanukah. It's not simple light, it's not simple illuminatory presence, but rather, again, it's the purest of light, it's the holiest of light, it's the most magnificent of light. And we've had the privilege, each of us, to see that light illuminate our home and illuminate our hearts all of these days. So the Maral says, all of Chanukah is amazing. And all of Chanukah's Lamala Min HaTeva is above nature. However, Mikol Makom, Bayom Hashmini Shal Chanukah, Anu Omdim Bishmini Shebishminis. But says the Maral, comes the eighth day of Chanukah, and there's something especially halig, there's something especially holy. There's something even more unique about this day. Bechinas, look what he writes, Nes Besoch Nes. A miracle within a miracle. Now the Maral goes on, the Maral explains on a very simple level, we know that the number 8 always represents Lamala Min HaTeva, always represents above the natural order. 7 is a number which represents nature, the natural order of the world, natural order of the universe, natural order of life. 8 always represents something above and beyond the natural order. So therefore the Maral, building on this theme, explains that Zos Chanukah, the eighth day of Chanukah, and these words are so gripping, Bechinas Nes Besoch Nes. Every day of Chanukah is miraculous. The eighth day of Chanukah is a miracle within a miracle. Obviously, this requires incredible understanding and incredible depth. Oh, I'll tell you what's even more dramatic about this. See, remember, we're talking about a rabbinic holiday, right? A Yom Tov Dirabanan. I understand if you would find this verbiage by the Regalim, by Rosh Hashanah, by Yom Kippur, biblical Yomim Tovim. But to find a rabbinic Yom Tov described in such a dramatic fashion, and the eighth day of this Yom Tov described as a Nes Besoch Nes, and here's the amazing part. You know, sometimes on Chanukah morning, there's a Yetz, on the eighth day morning, there's a Yetz Sahara. What's the Yetz Sahara? The Yetz Sahara is to clean up the menorahs. I'm not looking at it. I don't know if anyone's done this already, right? But sometimes, like, the Yetz Sahara is, okay, you know what? Let's get stuff off the windowsill already. There's stuff everywhere. This one spilled this, and this one did that. Finally, my house is going to get back to order. Everything's going to look normal. Don't do it. And if you did it, when you go home, put the menorah back out. You don't have to light it, obviously. We don't light it. But Hanukkah's not over. Hanukkah's not over. And what the Maharal is saying is, not only is it not over, but at this point in time, we have reached the holiest part of the Yom Tov. Today is the pinnacle. Today is the apex. Today is the peak of the Yom Tov experience. You know, sometimes human nature is, we're always like looking to the next thing. Okay, Hanukkah's over. We lit late candles. What's next? What's next? What's next? So, when you live life like that, always wondering what's next, you lose out on the opportunity to appreciate and to live in the moment. So much of Yiddishkeit is about absorbing the enormity of the moment and not always being focused on what's coming next. To get the menorahs back out, says the Maharal, because today is the Nes Besochnes. Up until now, we've been commemorating a miracle. Up until now, we've been reliving miracles. But today is the pinnacle, is the apex, is the zenith of the miraculous experience. Okay, beautiful. So what is it? What is the power of Zos Chanukah? So I'll share with you first a quick idea, then we'll delve into a little bit more. Take a look at number four. I'm going to go a little bit out of order. The great tzaddik Rabbi Yisrael of Rezhin says something just to build up the drama here. He says, Tfilas Yehudi Pashat B'Zos Chanukah, the prayer of a simple Jew, on Zos Chanukah, on this eighth day of Chanukah, Dome, I apologize, that's a typo, Dome, Litfilaso Shal Tzadik Hadar B'Rosh Hashanah V'Yom Kippurim. Do you hear this statement? The tfilos, the prayers of a simple Jew on Zos Chanukah, are as powerful as the prayers of the most righteous leaders of the generation on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. V'yachol lifkoa rikim. One could go ahead and pierce the heavens. Liftoach sha'arei rachamim v'ratzon. To open up gates of compassion, to open up gates of mercy. Such, says Yisrael of Rezhin, is the power of Zos Chanukah. What's the power of this day? So if you look at number three, there's a beautiful idea. Although this is not the primary idea that we're going to focus on, I just thought it's so dramatic, I couldn't not share it with you. So he quotes here in the Sefer Be'er HaChaim, who's the son of the Lal of a Rebbe, so he quotes here something beautiful. He skipped down on the right-hand side, column. He quotes from Rav Meir Yechiel of Ostrovsa, Mismama Laseis Ot Tam Lushvach, Lama Korin Liyom Zez Zos Chanukah. Get ready for this. Left-hand paragraph. Number three. Ki Kvar Matzinu Ba'ohel Sara V'Rivka, Shahaya ner dolek mishabis l'shabis. V'lachein, ein bazeh chidish kolkach, b'mashe shemen shehispik liyom echad, dolak shiva yomim, shay kvar hayu dvarim me'olam. So he says something amazing. He says the fact that oil could burn for 7 days, that we have historical precedent for. Where do we have historical precedent for it? There were three miracles that occurred in the tent of Sari Imenu, and later on those miracles also were present in the tent of Rivka. The three miracles, you know, was the bracha, the Isa, blessing in the dough, Anon Kasher Al HaOhel, there was a cloud that hovered over the tent, and Ner Shabbos, or Ner Dolekes Me Erev Shabbos, the Erev Shabbos. The Shabbos candles in Sari Imenu's tent remained lit from one Erev Shabbos to the next Erev Shabbos. It says the Be'er HaChaim, that candles stay lit for 7 days. We've seen that before. However, again, Ach b'yom hashmini, hisrach eish nes bizman shelo haya me'olam. When the Beis HaMikdash, when the menorah stayed lit for the 8th day, that was a miracle that no one had ever seen. That was something, that was an illuminatory experience that had never been seen or experienced in this world. Shema'ata kamoz dalak shmori yamim v'lo rak shiva. U'bazeh v'limeid al-kol an-hagab me'chanukah fine. So therefore, again, we put this all together, we come out with one dramatic idea, which is, there's something spectacular about this day. Number one, the fact that oil extended for longer periods of time, that's not unique to Hanukkah. We already saw that in Sefer Bereishis. That was already happening in the tent of Sara Imenu, in the tent of Rivka Imenu, and one perhaps could posit, probably or possibly, in the tents of Rachel and Leah as well. This idea that the candle extends way beyond the natural order, we've seen that. But to extend onto the 8th day, that we've never seen before. Nes besoch nes. It's been miraculous until now. It's even more miraculous now. The tefillos today, our ability to storm the heavens with whatever, for whatever we need and for whatever we know. Our community, our people, mankind needs, that ability that even a simple person has today is matched or mirrors the ability that the most righteous have on Yom Kippur, the most righteous have on Rosh Hashanah. So it behooves us to understand, so what is the power of Zos Chanukah? What is the secret of, I'm sorry?
Tefillah.
Oh, you're answering my question. Oh, tefillah. So tefillah, true, but tefillah is every day. Every day is tefillah. Meaning, again, you know, the beautiful part, one of the many beautiful things that we have as part of our religion is the ability to have a direct connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't need an intermediary. HaKadosh Baruch Hu listens to me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu yearns to hear me speak to him. I can use my own words. I can use the words of the sitter. So it's true. It might have a special school of tefillah, but the truth is I want to let you in on a little secret. Every day has the power of tefillah. There might be some days where there's different energies in the world, but every day has the power of tefillah. So we're going to look for something a little bit more unique to Zos Chanukah, something a little bit different about this day that allows it to be understood as Dineis Pesach Neis. So I want to take you on a little bit of a detour first through the Parsha. I'm not giving my Parsha class tonight, so I'm getting in a little Parsha this morning. I'm sorry. So take a look at number 5. So, I'm sorry. I apologize. It might be off. You'll stay tuned for the email. I have a potential conflict. Okay, we'll get to that later. So take a look at number 5. Either way, the Parsha class wouldn't be on this. So this week's Parsha Mikes contains what I think is one of the most dramatic episodes in the entire Parsha, or in the entire Torah. And that's Yaakov Avinu finding out that the son, who he thought was dead for 22 years, is not only alive, but is perhaps, could be titled, the second most powerful man in the civilized world. Meaning, again, remember, at this point in time, historically, Egypt, he's the cradle of civilization. Everything is happening in Egypt. So this Paro, and right below Paro is Yosef. And of course, there is so much drama in Yosef's revelation to his brothers, so much drama in their response to this world, to this news, so much drama in them retelling this to Yaakov seeing Yosef. So take a look at number 5. So the Torah says, "V'lo yochol Yosef lis'apik l'chal nitzavim alav." So what happens? Yosef could no longer contain himself. Yosef, remember again, Yosef hears the brothers, because remember at this point in time, Binyamin is accused of being a thief. Binyamin ultimately is going to be incarcerated. Yehuda promised Yaakov that he's not coming back without Binyamin. And the brothers are beside themselves. The brothers literally do not know what to do. They understand that whatever is unfolding over here is something dramatically bizarre. They understand deep down that somehow the events that are happening to them right now our divine reciprocity for what happened with Yosef, but they don't know what to do. So Yosef feels the pain of his brothers. It's a dramatic pasuk because, you know, sometimes you see someone else in pain. And what happens when you see someone else in pain? You say, Nebuch, or you let out a krechts, or you daven for them. But then what happens? You go on with your life. That's not the way of the Jew. The way of the Jew is velo yochol Yosef lehisapek. Yosef sees the pain of his brothers, and by the way, he also realizes that he's amplifying this pain. He's causing a lot of this stuff because he's choreographing these circumstances. He sees the pain of his brothers, and he can't hold back. He can't hold it in anymore. Look, what happens? Vayikra hotzil kol ish me'alai velo amad ish itobis vada Yosef alecha. And what happens? Yosef goes in and he clears the room. Vayitin eskolo bifchi vayishmu mitzrayim vayishav esad. Yosef begins to cry. Vayomer Yosef el echov, ani Yosef haod avi chai. I am Yosef. Is my father still alive? Velo yochlu echov la'anos oso ki nifhalu mipanov. And the brothers were unable to answer Yosef because they were simply overwhelmed. They were overwhelmed by, you know, sometimes things happen, or sometimes you hear something, it tells you something, and you're speechless. This is the step beyond speechless. The brothers, what are they supposed to do with this information? They're seeing the brother who 22 years, again, they sold off into servitude. Now he's powerful, now he's wealthy, now he's successful, now he's sustaining them. They had no idea what to say. This revelation is profound in two ways. Ani Yosef, ha'od avichai. Sa'ani Yosef, we understand. He's telling him, I'm Yosef. You thought I was the viceroy. I am the viceroy, but I'm still Yosef. But the real question is, what does it mean when he asks, Ha'od Avichai, is my father still alive? Meaning, remember, Up until this point in time, so every single conversation between Yosef and his brothers always made mention of Yaakov. Yaakov was always a central figure, and understandably so. Because every single time the Shvatim, every single time the brothers tried to lobby Yosef for compassion, they always tried to conjure up the image of an elderly father. We can't come back without our brother. We can't come back. We can't, the family has already been torn apart so many times. We can't do it again. So the Mefarshim, almost all the commentaries, ask the same basic question, which is, why does Yosef have to ask, Ka'od Avichai? Why does he have to ask, is my father still alive? At the end of the day, they were talking about Yaakov this entire time. And there's an incredible number of approaches taken by the Mefarshim. The Beis Halevi in number 6 says something dramatic. So first of all, the simple idea, which the Ramban and others bring down, is Yosef thought, maybe they're not telling the truth. You said your father is alive. You said father is alive. But the truth is, remember, they also made up a story about the fact that Echad Einenu, one is no longer. So they weren't forthcoming about what happened to Yosef, understandably so. So maybe they weren't forthcoming about Yaakov either. But the Beis Halevi says in number 6, V'gam ha-sha'amar lema oda v'chai gam ki mefarish ha-medrash d'lo haya begeder she'ila klal. The Beis Halevi says Yosef was not asking a question. U'kimo she'kasam, turn the page l'malo. D'lo haya makom v'she'ila The Beis Halevi says something amazing. Yosef is giving Musar to his brothers. Ani Yosef! Ha'od Avichai, is it possible that my father is still alive after all you have put him through? Is it possible that he's still, meaning Yosef knew how much his father loved him. And he could only imagine what his father was going through of lesser terms. You know, Yosef also suffered over the 22 years. But there's a very different experience for a child being separated from parents than from a parent being separated from children. Children have an incredibly amazing way of just going on with their lives. It doesn't, again, I want to be clear. Don't think for a moment that a day went by that Yosef did not think about his father and that Yosef did not cry himself to sleep. You know, in last week's parsha, in the episode with Eshes Potiphar, remember again, Yosef is alone in this strange land and this powerful woman is making constant advances on him. And he repels her advances over and over and over. So the Torah says that one day he's at home, la'asos melachto, to do his work. And there's a dispute in the Gemara. So the Gemara is, why was he home alone with her? So one opinion says he was there just to do his domestic responsibilities. Others say that day he was going to succumb to his yitzhar, he was going to give in to his desires. So what prevented him from doing so? Ra'a diyukno shel aviv. He saw the image of his father. It was, what does that mean? It was 22 years later, well, less than 22 years later, 15, 17, 18 years later, every single day he saw. You think that was the only day that he saw the image of his father? He saw the image of his father every single day. Every single day. Because not just Yaakov loved Yosef, Yosef loved his father, because just like, for Yaakov Avinu, Yosef was the last vestige of his beloved Rachel, of his wife. So for Yosef, Yaakov wasn't just a father. Yaakov was a father and a mother. For Yosef, Yaakov was his everything. Yaakov was the father, the mother he didn't have. So every single day he sees his father. Every single day he sees that image. So it says the Beis Halevi, Yosef gives them Musar. Ani Yosef, Ha'od Avichai, do you understand what you've done to father? Do you understand? How could it be that after 22 years of just unspeakable suffering, you always say, I suffered also. But here's the difference. I'm young and I'm on my own and I'm making my way and I've been successful and I married a wonderful woman and I have two wonderful kids. And with all of the pain, I've managed to build myself a life. But my father, how could he even be alive after everything you've done to him? How could he be alive after everything you put him through? So the Beis Halevi says, it was Musar. He was giving them Musar. Now again, it was Yosef. Yosef has a very delicate task. Because Yosef, again, wants or feels the need to give Musar, but at the same time wants to keep his brothers close. So if you notice again, whenever Yosef gives Musar to his brothers, it's always veiled and it's always nuanced, which, by the way, as an aside, sometimes in life you have to give rebuke, and sometimes in life you have to give musr, or the way people like to say it, constructive criticism. Right? The best way to give constructive criticism is emphasis on the constructive, less emphasis on the criticism. Whatever, and this is true in Shalom Bayis, this is true in a marriage, this is true with children, this is true with friends. There are times in life where you have to tell someone something. The more you could say it with love, and the more you can make the person on the receiving end feel that I'm saying this to you to build you up, not to knock you down, the better chance you have of the message being absorbed. Yosef has to give the musr, or feels he has to give the musr, but if you notice again, always does so with love, and always does so in a way that allows his brothers to feel close, but yet still get the message. That's the Beis Halevi. But if one looks in Hasidic literature, so many of the Rebbes understand this statement in a dramatically different way. Take a look at number 7. So this is from the Sefer Igra Dekala, which was Rav Tzvi Elimelech Shapira of Dinov. So the Rebbe says something amazing. He says, "Lefi pshuto eina muvan." So the Rebbe says, I don't understand Yosef's question of Ani Yosef ha'od avichai. The question doesn't make sense. V'chi ad hashtelo yada sh'avivchai. Yosef knows that his father is alive. Their brothers were constantly talking about Yosef. And again, remember, the last plea that Yehuda makes with Yosef before Yosef loses it, he can't restrain himself anymore, is Yehuda says, Eich ele elavi, v'anar einenu iti. How could I go to my father if the boy is not with me? How could I go back and face Yaakov if I don't bring back his youngest child, Binyamin? They were just talking about Yaakov the entire time. So why does Yosef say, "Or Avichai"? Listen to this. Ahusha Amar Lahem. Listen to this profound insight. Ani Yosef. The Rebbe says something amazing. When Yosef says Ani Yosef, this was not just simply a matter of self-identification. It's me. It's Yosef. But rather says that is something so much more profound. He says, Ani Yosef is a declarative statement that I am still the same person. Kime'az at hayom becheskosi, shalonit misi betumas ervas haaretz. So Yosef says to his brothers, I know I look different than you. I know I dress different than you. And even I speak a little bit differently than you. But Ani Yosef, I'm the same person. Egypt has not changed me. Egypt has not eroded my values and my ideals. Ani Yosef. I am the same person I was 22 years ago. Now, of course, that's not true. That's not true. He's not the same person. But what he's talking about is in terms of his religious ideas and ideals. I have not changed. As a person, I've changed dramatically. But as a Jew, or really, Jew is the wrong word, as a grandson of Avram Avinu, as a son of Yaakov Avinu, I am still the same, Ani Yosef. So what's Yosef's question? Ha'od Avichai. He says, what does this mean? Skip to the last two lines. Ha'od Avichai, Amar Lahem, Atem Pikiche Einon, Habitu Na Ureu, Im Od Shal Avichai. So the Rebbe over here quotes the pasuk from Tehillim. So I feel justified in doing this. Okay, we were fulfilled our Tehillim obligation. The pasuk in Tehillim says, "Kuf Mem Vav Pasuk Beis, Ahalulo Hashem Bechayai, Azamra Lelokai Beodi, Beodi." You know, we've studied this pasuk before. Rabbi Nachman has a beautiful piece in it, Beod Shebi. The Ode represents the goodness, the purity, the holiness in the Jew. So what Yosef was asking his brothers was the following question. Ani Yosef, I'm still the same person. Ha'od Avichai, is the Ode in my father still alive? Does my father still have his spiritual spark? Does my father still have his connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Yosef is saying, I can't even imagine the trauma my father has endured over the last 2+ decades. Is he still spiritually alive? I know that physically he's alive because we were just talking about him the whole time. And I know that he loves his sons because you've been telling me about this the whole time. But I'm asking you, does the spark of spirituality burn inside of him still? Ha'od is the od of my father, is the holiness of my father. Does it still burn bright inside of him? Take a look at number 8. The Shem Yishmuel says the same idea. Ha'od avichai v'yesh lahavin ha'lo kvar sha'al lahem ha'shalom avichem ha'zakim ha'amartem ha'odenu chai v'ashiv alo. So again, everybody asking the same question. Yosef, you know that Yaakov is alive. V'im kein lam ha'shal, middle of the second line after the period, v'nira, she'she'e laso ha'isa imruach HaKodesh Shora Alav. What does Ruach HaKodesh mean? You see, we often translate Ruach HaKodesh as prophecy. Ruach HaKodesh means just what it says. Ruach HaKodesh, a spirit of holiness. Is my father spiritually alive? Or has he died inside? You know, people could be organically alive, but dead on the inside. This is what Yosef is asking his brothers. I know father is organically or biologically alive. But is the Ode, is his Ruach HaKodesh, is his spirit, is his neshama still alive as well? Number 9, the Tzafnas Paneach. Skip down to the second line after the period. Lufi dvarein on yirle asi shapir. Aderech v'emidu tamidar v'achi emadayin omeid ala mudo umatzavo. Achar kol hisrapskus sha'avru alav. Shenehem archai v'kayom. Everybody's asking the same question. Yosef is saying, my dear brothers, despite everything that I have endured over the last 22 years, I have remained true to our ideas and ideals. Despite everything that I've endured over the last 2+ decades, and my faith has been tested continuously, I still remain a son of Yaakov. I still remain a grandson, a great-grandson of Avraham Avinu. I have stayed true. Ha'od Avichai? Is my father still alive? Is father okay? Is he still burned spiritually bright? Does his neshama, is the Ruach HaKodesh still there? Now, of course, we know, what was Yaakov's matzav ruach? What was Yaakov's spirituality during these years? The truth is, we don't know, because the Torah doesn't really tell us anything. Right? At the end of the day, we see that the first time, here's what we do know. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicates with Yaakov before the sale of Yosef, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicates with Yaakov again when? When? When he's heading down to Egypt, but during all of those years, we find no communication between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and between Yaakov Avinu, because we know, in Shechina Shora Ela Mitoch Simcha, a person can only experience God if they're in a state of simcha. If a person lives in a state of depression, a person lives in a state of melancholy, a person lives in a state of broken kite, I just made up that word, but you understand what I mean, right? Then a person can't connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The first time Yaakov Avinu goes in and talks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for 22 years is as he's going down to see his son Yosef. Yosef senses, Yosef knows his father. He was only 17 years old when he was sold, when he was ripped away from the family. But for those first 17 years, he did not leave his father's side. He knows his father. Tell me, is father spiritually alive? Ha'od Avichai, is he alive? Organically, I know. Biologically, I know. Spiritually, is he alive? I'll tell you something amazing. The brothers don't answer the question. Because, well, first of all, the brothers are speechless. They can't say anything. There is nothing for them to say. Remember, again, the next speaking part, I don't think I put these psukim on the sheet, but the next speaking part is Yosef just begins. I mean, Yosef asks a question, the brothers don't answer, and Yosef begins to speak. That's what Yosef says, don't be upset. This is all part of the divine plan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent me here. And the brothers never respond. The brothers never respond, A, because they're overwhelmed, and B, because what are they supposed to respond? Yes, Yosef, father has been spiritually dormant. Yes, Yosef, father's been spiritually challenged. When I say spiritually challenged, it doesn't mean Yaakov Avinu. It means Yaakov Avinu doesn't have that level of connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he enjoyed before and after. That's evidenced by the 22-year period of silence between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Yaakov Avinu. The brothers don't answer. Why am I sharing this with you? Because this is so, this exchange, you see, you have to understand something. The Torah is not a storybook. The Torah is not a storybook. So whenever the Torah is a book of law, book of legal principles, ideas and ideals, moral and ethical principles, when the Torah tells me a story, it's only there to teach me a lesson. So what is the Torah Kedosha conveying to us through this dramatic story, through this dramatic exchange? That life changes us. Life changes us. And trauma changes us. And difficult circumstances change us. You know, Yosef could say, Ani Yosef, I'm still the same person, but he's not. The truth is, in Yosef's case, he's better. In Yosef's case, he's stronger. Yosef is dramatically different, and that's simply because he's 22 years older. Not just because he was 17 and now he's 39. That's not the only reason, but because he has endured so much in life. So Yosef HaTzadik says to his brothers, I know how much I have changed. I had the great privilege of youth, and I had the great privilege of success, and that has helped me to go ahead and build and continue to rebuild myself and to continue to reach levels that I never thought I was capable of reaching. But how is father? Because one thing I know for sure, which is, he's not the same. He can't be the same. Is he spiritually alive, or has he gone dark? Is he spiritually vibrant, or is he struggling? Tell me, I know he's physiologically alive, but tell me how he is on the inside. Life changes us, and dramatic circumstances change us, and trauma changes us. Why is this important for Hanukkah? Take a look at number 10. The Be'er HaChaim quotes something really beautiful. He says the following, quotes over here from the Vayagi Yaakov of Papa. Shel pamim osa adam cheshbar nefesh biyom zeh. You know what happens on the eighth day of Chanukah? So on the eighth day of Chanukah, see, sometimes it's important to understand that there are things that happen in our neshama that often we're not consciously aware of. You know, life is all about being in sync with your soul. So sometimes the soul is going through things. You know, to give you like a mashal, sometimes Nebuch, a person could be ill. And they don't even know it. Why? Because again, externally, everything seems fine. But I'm not often aware of what's happening in the processes inside of my body. So sometimes a person's not aware of what's happening with their soul either. The goal of life is to reach this level of equilibrium with my neshama, so I always know what's happening with my neshama. So the Rebbe says, I want to tell you what's happening with the neshama today. There's a little bit of melancholy. There's a little bit of sadness. Why? Because Chanukah is almost over. Skip past the brackets. He says, "Nofeles belibo machshavas atzvos v'yeyush." Sometimes there's a sadness, there's a despair. Kishuro, left hand column, kishuro, shelit sa'aro, lo nitzal karoi esa'oro shenishbu yom elu. You know what the melancholy is about? I'm sad that I didn't take advantage of Chanukah the way that I should have. I'm sad that I didn't capitalize on this Yom Tov, and I didn't tap into its energy in the way that I thought I would. So what does this mean? You know, Chanukah, we spoke about this, I don't know if we spoke about this last week or in previous years. What's the essence of Chanukah? What's the essence of Chanukah? The essence of Chanukah is rededication. Right, what happened on the Yom Tov? What are we celebrating? The Chashmonaim went into the Beis HaMikdash. They went into the Beis HaMikdash. And what did they find when they went into the Beis HaMikdash? It was totally defiled. It was totally bereft of any sanctity. And what did they do? It's not a trick question. What did they do? They re-sanctified it. They cleaned it up. They got rid of the schmutz. And they re-sanctified and they rededicated that place into a beautiful, luminescent holiness. They kindled the light. What's the message? So you'll say to yourself, you're listening, who cares? Meaning, what is? It's very nice. It's a great story. But why does that impact me? What does that mean for me? And what it means for us is the following. That if you could take a structure that was holy and then so badly defiled, and you could rededicate it and restore it to its former holiness, then guess what? If I can do that for that mikdash, then I can do it to the most important mikdash. And the most important Beis HaMikdash is not a building. It's not a structure. It's not something you build out of gold, out of copper, out of brass, out of bricks, out of stones. It's not a structure that stands in the holiest place of the world in Yerushalayim, Yerachalosh, and the Har HaBayis. The most beautiful Beis HaMikdash is the one that lives within each of us. It's the Bilvavi Mishkan Evne. It's the Beis HaMikdash that we call our Neshama. And if I could take a structure that was so badly defiled and I could rededicate it, then imagine what I could do with myself. Then imagine what I could do with my life. Then imagine what I could do with my neshama. If the Chashmonaim could come in and rededicate a Beis HaMikdash that was defiled by the worst things possibly imaginable, then I could rededicate myself. No matter how many bad decisions I've made, no matter how many wrong turns I've made, no matter how off course in life I become, I have the ability to rededicate, to recalibrate, to re-energize, and to start again. This is the power of Chanukah. And then says Rabbi, you know what happens? I come to the eighth day of Chanukah, and for many of us, no one here, but for others, I realize I'm still the same person. I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I was so sure when I looked at that first night of the candles, I said to myself, this is it. This is the new beginning. This is the new me. This is the new rededication. I'm going to start again. I'm going to be better. I'm going to be luminescent. I'm going to be holy. I'm going to be magnificent. And then what happens? And then what happens? Life happens. Right? The same way that Yaakov and Yosef are dramatically impacted by the events of their life. Hopefully the events of our Chanukah not have been as dramatic. But life happens. And stuff happens, and I have a falling out with this one, or a disagreement with this one, or a setback in this area of life, or this struggle, or that struggle. And sure enough, I just have to deal with all of the craziness that life has to offer, and that craziness leaves its mark on my soul, that craziness leaves its mark on who I am. And here I stand at the eighth day of Chanukah, and my soul is enveloped in a state of melancholy, because I didn't take advantage of the rededication. I was so sure it was going to be the new beginning. You know, in Chassidus, there's a concept that, you know, there's a discussion about when the Sefer HaChaim, when does the Book of Life, the inscription of the Book of Life, when is it sealed? So, you know, the classic understanding is, Kadosh Baruch Hu inscribes on Rosh Hashanah, and it's sealed on Yom Kippur. If you want to push it a little bit, Hoshanah Rabbah. Others push it to Shmini Atzeres. But, you know, by the Hasidim, they're the eternal optimists. And the old Hasima actually doesn't occur until when? Until Chanukah. So at first night of Chanukah, I bring by myself, okay, I've got 8 more days to get this together. It's like a miniature, you know, a Sarasimi Tshuva. And I come to the last day, and I realize I'm the same person. I just, once again, I didn't get it together. Once again, I didn't make the dramatic changes I thought I would. Once again, I didn't pull myself together like I know that I have to. It's not a secret. I know what I have to do. I know how I have to do it. I know the changes that need to be made. I know the concrete steps I have to take. And the truth is, it's not even because I don't want to. It's not even because I don't care. It's just because sometimes I get so lost in the whole shuffle of life that I just lose my will and I lose my bearings and I lose the course. I lose the course. I lose the derech to making those dramatic changes happen. I was so sure Chanukah was going to be that turnaround time. And now it's the eighth day. And now the menorah's put away by some, right? And now again, the window sill is empty. And now tonight's just going to be another regular night. And really for many of us, today is just another regular day. And I missed it. I missed it. Said the Rebbe something amazing. Va'alov, so left-hand paragraph. Va'alov lehiskaber ba'osa shah. So again, we come to the eighth day of Chanukah. And I feel like Yosef, and I feel like Yaakov. And Yosef, Ha'od Avichai, so much has happened over the last 8 days, and it's changed me, and it's sometimes it's had negative impacts on me, and I haven't been able to do the work I need to do. So what happens? Says the Rebbe, what do we have to do? What's the avod of Zos Chanukah? Va'alov liskaber ba'osa shah, v'litchos machshavos psulos elu v'lizkar, ki Zos Chanukah. Sha'adayin anu omdim be'emtzei mechanukah, va'adayin efshar lifol miskalos. So I want to tell you a secret, that even if you did make the mistake of putting away your menorah, Chanukah is not over. The season of rededication is not over. You have at least another 6-7 hours. I don't know what time it is now. Another at least 6-7 hours, till 5:30 is the evening, right? Till nightfall. It's still Chanukah. Zos Chanukah is the day we remind ourselves. You see, what's amazing is the nature of the human condition is that we plan, great dreams, great aspirations, but then we sometimes just fail to execute. We fail to pull the trigger on it. And then we turn around and we say, oh, I missed another opportunity. And that feeling often envelops us on this day. And in this moment, we have to give ourselves chizuk. It's not over. It's not over. It's still Hanukkah, the season of rededication, the ability to start again, the ability to recalibrate, the ability to say to ourselves that just because I've been a certain way for a certain amount of time, and for some of us, it's been a long time that I've been a certain way, it's not too late to change. It's not too late to rededicate. It's not too late to burn some type of beautiful luminescent fire of change. He goes on. There's still 7 hours left. There's still 7 hours of Hanukkah. You know what you could accomplish in 7 hours of Hanukkah? Now, you may have to clear your schedule, right? You may have to cancel some appointments. But at the end of the day, what a Jew could accomplish in 7 hours, what a Jew, it's kind of like, I apologize for this, it's kind of like Lahavdil dog years. You know, what a Jew, for a Jew, 7 hours is like for the rest of the world, 7 years. What a Jew could accomplish in 1 hour, the turnaround that a Jew could have, the rededication that a Jew could have, the spiritual energy that a Jew could amass in 7 hours, it would take the rest of the world years to accomplish that same thing. Zos va'od, ki zahina takwis va'matara shel Chanukah, v'zohu zos Chanukah. Lahavi esa adam lidei shiflus va'anava, avalo la'atzu siyesh chasu shalom. Rebbe says something amazing. There's almost like contradictory feelings today. On one hand, there's a sadness, and there's almost like a little bit of a humility that I can't believe I let the days go by and I didn't take advantage of them the way that I should. I didn't take advantage of them the way that I should. Now, I'll tell you just an amazing Maaseh Shehayah that somebody just mentioned to me. Before Hanukkah, I sent an email out to my shul. There was a wonderful initiative by the Technology Awareness Group, by TAG, to go screenless for 30 minutes by Hadlakas Neros. Right? Just that a person should put away their phone for the first 30 minutes after I can. So I sent out to shul, and Baruch Hashem was wonderful. So somebody came over to me on the second day of Hanukkah. So I did it last night, it was great, but I'm pretty sure I can't do it tonight. So I said, what do you mean you can't do it? Well, you know, I can't do it. I said, let's just be honest. You can do it, but you won't do it. I said, it's the second night of Hanukkah. You're telling me that you don't have the willpower, you don't have the ability? I said, unless you're the President of the United States, you need to tweet every 5 minutes. You know, you could go ahead and you could put your phone down. But you see, this is the mindset. The mindset is, I gather some strength for a little bit of time, but then it just dissipates. So I come to the eighth day of Hanukkah, and on one hand, I feel sad. And on one hand, I feel depressed, but I'm not going to allow myself to fall into the clutches of sadness. Because there's still 7 hours. There's still a day to be able to accomplish whatever I want to accomplish. And herein lies the power of Zos Chanukah. Take a look at number 11. So just to further this a bit more. So the Gemara says, again, we're going to do this outside just because of time. So this is perhaps, we've spoken about this many times in past years. The Gemara here discusses the machlokes of the dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel about how to light the menorah. And of course, again, that machlokes is most pronounced last night because Beis Shammai says you begin on the first night with 8 and each subsequent night you remove 1 candle. To in Beis Shammai's view, by night number 8 you have 1 candle. And by Beis Hillel's view, again, you go up. First night you start with 1, you make your way up, and by night number 8 you have 8 candles. Fundamental dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. And the Gemara discusses the reasoning for each. Beis Shammai seems to model his observance after what the sacrificial order of Sukkot. We're not going to get into it now, but the way it works on Sukkot is you start out with a large number of offerings and then slowly but surely decrease that number as Sukkot comes to a close. So Beis Shammai models the kindling of the menorah after the sacrificial service of Sukkot. Start big and then win your way down. Beis Hillel says, Ma'alin bakodesh ve'in moridin. We go up in holiness and we do not digress. So we add another candle every night. But the question, of course, is what is at the root of their dispute? If you take a look at number 12, this is a much longer piece than what we're going to go into over here, but the Nesiv HaShalom, the son of the Rebbe, has a magnificent insight. And the Rebbe says, take a look by paragraph Aleph. He says, V'ha'inyan dihinei b'neis Chanukah kilulim shnei nisim. He says, on Chanukah, there are two different kinds of miracles. Haneis shom asarte giborim biyad chaloshim v'rabim biyad na'atim utmeim biyad tohorim shakedusha sholta b'sitra'acha v'hu inyan akiras hara. So the Nesiv HaShalom says, the first miracle of Hanukkah is what he calls Akiras Hara, an uprooting of evil. Right? God, you delivered the many into the hands of the few. You delivered the wicked into the hands of the righteous. So evil was uprooted. Akira Sarah. V'neis ha-shemen shelo hayabad lahadlik ele yom echad. V'dalak shmar yomim ad she-spiku laso shemen chadash. Tainu espashtus or kidusha. I'm just going to read two lines, then we'll translate. Sher or agad l'ma'o la'ari lahem. V'yin ha-gbaras korach ha-tov. V'haynu, she-hayar neis be-bechinas sur meira u-bechinas asei tov. The Son of Rebbe says that the kindling of the menorah represents, again, the infusion of holiness. The infusion of holiness. So there are two different miracles on Hanukkah. There's Akiras Hara, the removal of evil, and then there is the infusion of good. And those two miracles, or those two dynamics, are represented by the two distinct miracles of Hanukkah. Hanukkah, we commemorate two miracles. We commemorate the military victory, that represents the removal of evil, and we commemorate the miracle of the oil, which represents the infusion of good. Now, the Slan Rebbe says this dynamic is again captured in Tehillim by David HaMelech when he says, Sur Meira V'Yaseh Tov. Spiritual success requires two things. Number one, Sur Meira, person has to remove negative influences, V'Yaseh Tov, and do good. We've spoken about this concept before. You know, the Gemara has an expression. Let's say I become ritually impure. I come in contact with a corpse, so I become Tamei. I have to go to the mikvah. So I immerse myself in the mikvah one time, two times, 27 times, whatever it is. Only one issue, which is I'm holding a dead rodent in my hand. Not to get too graphic over here, but you understand. I'm holding a dead rodent in my hand. So am I pure?
No.
No. Why? Because Chazal called this Tovel v'sheretz biyado. A person immerses, but there's a sheretz, there's a source of impurity in their hand. This is a metaphor for life. That sometimes we try to move forward by doing dramatically beautiful things, but we don't take the time to fix the stuff that's broken. You see, when we want to grow in life, everybody likes to grow in a positive, forward-moving dynamic. What don't we like to do? We don't like to address the fundamental flaws that we have. You see, I'm happy to take on everything. I'll say Sefer Tehillim 27 times an hour, right? And I'll give even more money to tzedakah. And I'll go ahead and I'll do this, and I'll do work for this organization. I'll do everything positive I can. But what about fixing the stuff that's broken in me? Not really interested in that. Here's the problem. If I don't address my deficiencies, and I don't address that which is broken, you can move forward a couple of steps, but inevitably, you're always pulled back. That's why many times in life, when we ask ourselves, why don't we have forward-moving momentum? I have clarity about what I want to accomplish, clarity about what I want to do. I even have a plan. And yet year after year, the plan doesn't actualize. More often than not, it's because everybody loves the Aseh Tov. Everybody loves to do positive things. The Sur Meira, which means the removing of the things that are broken, the removing of the handicaps, the removing of the things that keep me tethered to mediocrity, that's a lot more difficult to accomplish, and very often we're not interested in that. Says the Slan Rebbe something amazing. The Nes of Chanukah represents these two dynamics. There's the Sur Meira. There was the removal of evil. The removal of evil represents the military conquest, the overpowering of the Syrian Greeks. That was the removal of evil. And then there was the Aseh Tov, the positive, forward-moving spiritual dynamic. That's represented by what? That's represented ultimately again by the miracle of the oil. The Slan Rebbe says something amazing. The dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is about how to move forward in life. Beis Shammai says on the first night, you have to start with 8 candles. What does 8 candles represent? 8 candles represent luminescent perfection. Candles represent a perfect spiritual foundation that can only be accomplished by how? Sur Meira. In life, if you want to move forward, you have to start by tackling deficiencies. You have to start by tackling those things that are broken. If I don't look inward, and I'm not honest with myself, I have a lot of good, but I also have a lot of things that are profoundly broken. If I'm not honest in that personal intake, that personal inventory, and I don't work on those things, I can't move forward in life. Beis Shammai says the first night, the 8 candles represent perfect clarity. Clarity about what? Clarity about who I am, what I am, and what I'm not. And if I'm willing to go ahead and have perfect clarity about myself and tackle my deficiencies, then ultimately, again, I could move forward. Beis Shammai says growth in life begins with Sur Meira. I have to first have the clarity to tackle my deficiencies, and only once I address those things that are broken in me, then and only then do I have the ability to move forward in life. What does Beis Hillel say? Beis Hillel, on the other hand, says, what do you do on the first night? Beis Hillel says, you start one candle. Because Beis Hillel says, listen, Shammai, in principle, I totally agree with you. Absolutely. We should all start in life by doing a personal inventory, taking stock of the things that are good, and also taking stock of the things that are broken. And then creating an action plan for how to remedy all of the things that are broken. And then to act on that action plan. Everybody has action plans. The question is executing. Then to follow through on the action plan. But says Beis Hillel, here's my concern. If we wait for people to take personal inventory, if we wait for people to assess in a true way their deficiencies and to act on remedying them, you know what's going to happen?
Nothing.
So Beis Hillel says, I would like to make a counter proposal. The counter proposal is, start doing something positive. Just do something. Light one candle. Create a little more light. Do one thing that's positive. Again, I want to point out, Beis Hillel is not at all disagreeing in principle with Shammai. Not at all disagreeing in principle. Right? Again, he's saying, of course, David HaMelech says it. The proper order, and again, this is very important. The proper order for growth in life is Sur Meira, the Asay Tov. If you want real growth in life comes, number one, by tackling my deficiencies. I mean, you don't tackle my deficiencies. You tackle your deficiencies. Everybody loves tackling someone else's deficiencies. Step number one for growth in life is tackle your deficiencies. Sur Meira. One must depart from that which is negative. And then after I go ahead and I tackle my deficiencies, then Asay Tov. Then I've set the stage, I've created the platform, I've created the foundation for dynamic, forward-moving, momentous action. But says Hillel, I agree. But if you make that the precondition to life growth, people won't grow. So instead, tell people, just grow. Just do something. Just bring in a little bit more light. Just do something positive. Just move your life agenda forward, even in one small baby step. Yes, keep in the back of your mind that you have to tackle your deficiencies. Keep in the back of your mind that you have to take the personal inventory. Keep in the back of your mind that you're never really going to have sustained growth unless you remedy those things that are broken inside of you. But until you get to that point, just move yourself forward. Just keep moving. Just light one candle after the next, after the next, after the next. So the fundamental dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is a dispute in life growth. Beis Shammai is an ardent chassid of David HaMelech. Sur Meira, li'aseh tov. We start the first night with perfect luminescent clarity. I have to identify what's wrong, what's deficient in me, figure out a way to fix it, and then I could move forward with the positive stuff. Beis Hillel says, I agree in principle. I just don't think it's practical. So instead, what I would make is a counter suggestion. Moseh Faholich. Just do something positive. Just move yourself forward. Just be able to tell yourself that you're infusing a little bit more light each and every day. That one day has one more candle than the next. That one day has a bit more light than the next. Even though it's a disruption of the natural order, sometimes you need the Asay Tov. Sometimes a person needs to do more good in order to be able to have the courage to introspect, in order to be able to have the courage ultimately again to take that personal inventory. And I think at the end of the day, what Chazal are trying to teach us is this is the power of Zos Chanukah. Do you want to know the power of today? You see, many of us, when we start Chanukah, when we looked at that first ner, you know, I often say, when you look into that first candle, you see your own reflection. I am that candle. I'm that menorah. Because when you look at that menorah on the first night, you see one little candle, but then you see those seven other receptacles that have the ability to be filled with oil and burn bright as all. That menorah is me. And I say to myself, you know what? I'm going to mirror that menorah. Just like that menorah is going to grow every night, I'm going to grow every night. And here's the plan, and here's the vision, and here's what I'm going to do, and here's how I'm going to do it. And then what happens? Yaakov happens, Yosef happens, life happens, and we find ourselves on Zos Chanukah, And I didn't grow the way that I wanted. And I didn't add another candle the way that I wanted. And I didn't accomplish the things I wanted to. And I didn't change myself and rededicate the Mishkan and the Mikdash in my heart the way that I wanted to. And the menorah is already back in the break front. And now what? And now what? And now what? And says the Svarim, the Gaul power of Zos Chanukah is, there's still time to do something. There's still time to do something. It's not going to be the vision you had on the first night. It's not going to be the magnificent, grandiose rededication you thought you were going to experience. It's okay. Sometimes life happens, and sometimes even with the best intentions, we just get derailed and sidetracked. But there is still time to do something. You know what remember the Maharal? How did the Maharal describe this day of Zos Chanukah? Nes besoch nes. Because you know sometimes what the greatest miracle is? The greatest miracle is not that a little cruise of oil could burn for 8 days. Because let's be honest, the Ribbono Shel Olam could do anything. It could have burned for 80 days. It could have burned for 80 years. It could have burned for 8,000 years. And the truth is, it's no less, more or less miracles. God could do whatever he wants. What's the Nes Besonech? You know what the greatest miracle? The greatest miracle that exists in this universe is when a person does not give up. Because it is so easy to give up. It is so easy to throw in the towel. It is so easy to fall back into old ways. It is so easy just to say, listen, another Hanukkah gone by, more dreams unrealized, more aspirations unactualized, just business as usual. The Nes Besonech of Zos Chanukah is when a person realizes, okay, the rededication once again did not materialize as planned, but I am not going to give up. I'm going to salvage something. I'm going to kindle something. I'm going to create some additional light in some way. That's Zos Chanukah. The moment that the spiritual melancholy sets in, because once again I didn't rededicate myself or my life, I push back that melancholy with a little bit more light. I push back that sadness with even just a little bit of positive, forward-moving, dynamic activity. That's the Nes Besoch Nes. That is the drama of this day. When the Jew realized, I'm not giving up. I'm not yielding. I'm going to salvage something. And that's what Rabbi Sura Lavrajin says so beautifully, that today we have the power to effect change like no other day. Yes, tefillah, of course. But you know, just as important as tefillah, just as important as prayer, is our ability to engage in dynamic activity. So we have a power today, says Rabbi Sura Lavrajin, because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees that on one hand, I'm saddened by the fact that I did not live up to the potential I thought I had on first night. But I don't give up. I don't yield. I'm going to spend the rest of the day today somehow, some way, kindling something. I possess a power that even the greatest tzaddikim don't possess on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. I, the Nes Besoch Nes, the miracle within the miracle of Zos Chanukah is not the oil. The Nes Besoch Nes of Zos Chanukah is you. The Nes Besoch Nes of Zos Chanukah is me. Is the ability not to give up, is the ability not to yield, but the ability to find something to kindle and not allow the sadness and melancholy to overtake us. And I'll end looking at number 13. There's a beautiful halacha, and with this we'll conclude. The halacha says, Hanoser b'yom hashmini min hashemen. It's an interesting halacha. What happens if you have leftover oil? What happens if you have leftover oil? What do you do with your leftover Chanukah oil? Tatar chashi adlaka. Oselo medura. You have to burn it off. Now again, don't get nervous. This doesn't apply to oil, like if you have like a container of oil, right? But it means if let's say you had Neros Chanukah. Let's say I was using oil, and what happens? The Chanukah candle went out, right? So the halacha is that if you lit your menorah and the fire went out, you're not obligated to relight it, assuming that it had the ability to remain lit. But what do you do with that leftover oil? So the problem is, I can't use it to cook, right? Because it's what's called the tzassel mitzvah. It's set aside for a mitzvah. So you can't use it for your own mundane purposes. So what do you do with it? So the Shulchan Aruch says, listen to this. Oselo medura. What do you do? What's a medura? A medura is like a bonfire. A bonfire. You go ahead and you make a large flame. You burn off the oil. Visarfal bifne atzmo. And I think that the halacha is teaching us an incredible metaphor. Because you know what the reality is if we're honest with ourselves? Most of us have leftover oil. Most of us had a lot of oil to burn over this Chanukah. A lot of potential. And the truth is, we didn't ignite it. We didn't ignite it. So it's sitting in the receptacle called my soul. There's leftover oil in the receptacle of my neshama. But it's okay, because I have the ability to ignite it now, if I want to. I have the ability to, and here's the amazing part. See, on the nights of Hanukkah, all you get to do is one little flame, one little flame. Today, with your leftover oil, you can make a bonfire. Today, with the leftover oil, there's no holds barred. There are no halachas that tell me about one little wick. I could put as many wicks in there. I could let it burn as bright as I want to. This is the incredible koach, the incredible strength, and the incredible gift of Zos Hanukkah. These last few hours of Hanukkah, where we sit here with our leftover oil, we remind ourselves that we still have time to spare. There's another 7 hours. There's another half a day. There's still time to create light. So when you go home or wherever you're going from today, figure out how you're going to ignite your leftover oil. If it's going to be to daven with more kavana, fantastic. If it's going to be to make a bikur cholim visit, beautiful. If you're going to call up someone who doesn't get out much, fantastic. If you're going to volunteer a little bit more, incredible. You're going to give extra tzedakah, magnificent. You're going to be nicer to someone, talk nicer to someone, not speak lashon hara for 37 seconds, whatever it's going to be. Whatever it is, ignite the oil. Because there's only one tragedy, one potential tragedy, which is if Hanukkah ends and the oil's still there. So Hanukkah gives us the opportunity to take all the leftover oil and burn it intensely and burn it bright as a magnificent menorah. May we be zocheh mi'artz Hashem that even if we haven't kindled the light we have wanted to over the course of this Hanukkah, may we be privileged to use the remaining hours of this beautiful Yom Tov to not just light one flame, but to create the beautiful luminescent bonfire of our oil and to infuse beautiful light into our lives, into our mishpachos, into our communities, and into our world. No, because the halacha was codified not like that. Did anyone ever...